I wish they could hurry up and clean up the mess and take out the equipment before spring comes around.
A barge that sank near Kwikluk last fall still hasn't been removed. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, remembering Juneau Children's book author, Jean Rogers.
Jean encouraged all kinds of people in wherever their heart was taking them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
A barge that sank in a Kuskokwim River slough last fall near the village of Kwikluk is still there. Residents are concerned fuel and oil from the barge may be contaminating a traditional watering hole. State officials say the tests haven't shown any contamination, but they have other concerns about the stranded barge. KYUK's Mark Earhart visited the village and has this report.
It's a cold February afternoon about a half mile from the village of Kwikluk. Hard-packed snow crunches beneath our feet.
Tell me exactly where we are.
We are at the Kuskokwim Slough, right by the traditional watering hole where people from Kwikluk pack originally used to pack water, and now it's contaminated with...
That's Ivan Olek, the water plant operator here in Kwikluk. He says fuel and oil from heavy equipment on the sunken barge may be making people who consume river water sick.
This is the first experience that people noticed the water is different in taste. And some kids, they say it's rainbow-like water. And I said, that's most likely diesel or something.
The barge, owned by Faulkner Walsh Constructors out of Bethel, has been in the water since October. Initially, some diesel fuel or lube oil did spill from the barge, which now sits half under the frozen ice. The city of Kwikluk has advised residents to stop packing water from the river and is offering water free of charge from the village plant. Olek says he took a water sample from the traditional hole and sent it to a lab in the lower 48.
Medica said it's little to be reported, but consuming it will affect human, and people will start getting sick or nauseated or have diarrhea.
Bob Carlson is with the Department of Environmental Conservation here in Bethel.
And I reviewed the lab results of that sample, and in reviewing the results, I found that there were no hits or evidence of contaminants that they sampled for. And there was quite a list of, potential contaminants you might expect to find in petroleum that they did run samples for. And they simply didn't come up with anything.
Carlson says he cannot say why exactly people have gotten sick, but the sample suggests that it may not be from diesel fuel or other petroleum products in the water.
River water can make you sick. It has a lot of contaminants, particularly biological contaminants, bacteria and protozoans, things that can make you quite sick or worse.
Whatever is or isn't in the water, residents say it's the water that's making them ill. Carlson says his department has been in contact with Faulkner Walsh in order to get the firm to remove the barge, though nothing has happened as of yet.
Well, we've been trying to convince Faulkner Walsh to come up with a plan, submit a plan to the agencies who are concerned with this. That would be us, EPA, perhaps the Coast Guard, Department of Natural Resources, the State Department, and then proceed to remove the vehicles that are on the barge or were on the barge and the barge itself, so that they don't get loose and break up.
He says the worst-case scenario would be a piece of heavy equipment resting in the river and possibly damaging boats and other barges.
There were six vehicles on this barge, according to Faulkner Walsh, some of them quite large. And our concern is primarily that if they get loose and go someplace in the river, we won't know where they've gone to.
The DEC is not alone in wanting the barge out. Ivan Olick and other Gweeflug residents feel the same.
I wish they could hurry up and clean up the mess and take out the equipment before spring comes around. Then if they don't, that's going to be another disaster that we're going to be looking at.
Faulkner Walsh did not return requests for interviews for this story. In Gweeflug, I'm Mark Earhart.
Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar finalized the development plan for the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Senator Mark Begich says he welcomes the decision to allow a pipeline corridor in the reserve.
The development plan could be one of the last decisions for Salazar. He's leaving office as soon as his successor is confirmed. And to many Alaskans, he's leaving the controversial decisions until the exit door is within reach. The final NPRA plan allows for oil and gas development on 11.8 million acres. It also allows for producers to apply for permits to build a pipeline that would carry oil from the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas through NPRA into the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Senator Begich calls that the most exciting development.
That has to be not only environmentally sound, but economically have the ability to be built, meaning that they can't have such regulation on it that you can't economically build it. So I think that is important to have that piece of the puzzle laid down.
But his Alaskan colleagues in Washington disagree. Both Senator Lisa Murkowski and Representative Don Young say the pipeline won't be feasible. Senator Murkowski warns that any proposed route will be targeted for environmental lawsuits. Neither she nor Young were able to comment. The plan extends the protected area around Teshekpuk Lake. Senator Begich said that could be pared back in the future because the development decision creates a working group of villages, tribal organizations, and native corporations. Senator Begich says the pipeline could be developed while oil companies drill in the Arctic Ocean, but he warns any project is at least 7 to 10 years away.
The developments of the Outer Continental Shelf are longer term, but as those get developed, you got to simultaneously develop this pipeline. And the thing about the pipeline, which is important, once you start developing that pipeline and have a route, then some of those existing leases and wells in National Petroleum Reserve become economical because now they have a pipeline they can attach to it.
ConocoPhillips is already operating in the NPRA. Conservation groups heralded the decision, saying the plan rightly protects habitat for waterfowl and caribou herds. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Conoco sent APRN a written comment late today stating they need to review the DOI plan as it pertains to a pipeline route before commenting on its viability. The company also wrote that the concept for a pipeline across NPRA relates specifically to a successful OCS Chukchi Sea discovery and development. The company says the final plan takes a significant amount of acreage off the market for future leasing in NPRA. One of the drafters of the state constitution has weighed in on a proposed amendment to that document. Vic Fisher appeared before the House Education Committee today to oppose a resolution that could allow for public funding of religious schools through vouchers. He cautioned legislators against taking a casual attitude when considering constitutional changes.
To me, the basic question is, are we solving a non-existing problem at this point? And the burden is on those who say we should amend the Constitution.
Fisher, who also served as a state senator and in the territorial legislature, also explained that the amendment prohibiting funding of religious and private schools was not seen as controversial by the delegates to the Constitutional Convention. He said the language, known as a Blaine Amendment, passed unanimously.
So it's not as if some kind of an amendment, Blaine Amendment, was had horns on it and was something awful.
In addition to hearing from Fisher, the Education Committee took testimony on the resolution from residents across the state. Opinion was mixed. Some argued that state funding of religious schools could create more options for parents, and others said it would weaken the separation of church and state and that it could drain money from public schools. For an amendment to the Constitution to be made, it has to pass both chambers of the legislature with a two-thirds vote. After that, Alaskans have to approve the change by a majority vote. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the ukulele is the instrument of choice for a group of Alaskan judges.
It's like a tumbleweed keeps picking up people who either have an interest or they used to play it when they were younger or they wanted to get into it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, where every year Alaska Natives from all corners of the state graduate and become engineers, scientists, and physicians. What started as an idea in 1995 is now 1,000 strong. Learn more at ansep.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Sea Alaska officials say Board Chairman Albert Kukesh is making slow but steady progress as he recovers from a Monday heart attack. The Juneau-based Regional Native Corporation posted an online update this afternoon. It says Kukesh has become more awake and alert during the past 48 hours and has been able to communicate with his family. Sea Alaska says his strength is slowly returning. Providence Alaska Medical Center today upgraded his condition from critical to serious. Kukesh served 16 years in the State House and Senate. The Tlingit leader from Angoon also co-chairs the Alaska Federation of Natives. Family members have asked that no flowers be sent since he is allergic. They have also requested friends and associates wait until he recovers further before trying to contact him. A settlement has been reached in a Wrangell Borough lawsuit. The Borough of Wrangell will receive information and financial compensation. Noel Selray will keep his severance package from the medical center. KSDK's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Noel Selray is the former CEO of Wrangell Medical Center. He was fired by the former WMC board that was recalled and replaced. There has been a legal dispute over a laptop and iPad that Ray allegedly took from the WMC after being fired. Ray alleged they contained personal information and did not belong to the medical center. In the settlement, the borough will be compensated $250,000 by Chubb, the Wrangell Medical Center insurance company. The Borough of Wrangell and the Medical Center are no longer liable for any of the alleged payments or contract obligations requested by Ray. Additionally, a retired judge will oversee the recovery of all WMC information from the laptop and iPad. Ray is also responsible for paying the borough $2,500 for the laptop and iPad. Ray says he's satisfied with the settlement.
I feel good. It's a fair outcome. I think we can all hopefully move forward. I wish nothing but the best for the community and hope they're able to complete the hospital project. I think we found as good a middle ground as you can in a case such as this.
Wrangell attorney Bob Blasco is preparing the final documents to be signed by all parties involved. The process is expected to take a week to 10 days. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
No one from the Wrangell Medical Center Board or from City Hall was willing to comment on the settlement. Longtime Juneau resident Jean Rogers is being remembered as a loving mother, beloved children's book author, and patron of the arts. Rogers died Wednesday of heart failure. She was 93. KTOO's Casey Kelly has this remembrance.
Jean Rogers always wanted to be a writer. In 1988, she told KTOO,
I like to make up things and to use my imagination and to make a story. For me, the story is it.
Her most famous book, King Island Christmas, is about a village's struggle to overcome a winter storm and bring a priest ashore to celebrate the holiday. It's based on the experiences of Rogers' longtime friend, Juneau artist Ree Munoz, who lived on King Island in the Bering Sea in 1952. Munoz illustrated the book, which was later adapted into a musical. Rogers talked about their collaboration.
From hearing her talk and seeing her pictures, gradually I got the idea that it would make a good story to tell about their leaving the island. You know, that's kind of a universal refugee story. You have to leave your homeland and go someplace else. And I thought it would make a very poignant story to tell.
Born Jean Clark in Idaho on October 1st, 1919, she attended Teachers College and taught in her home state until she saved enough money to go to the University of California at Berkeley. There she earned a bachelor's degree in English and met George Rogers. They were married in 1942 and moved to Juneau 3 years later aboard the Princess Nora steamship. Throughout their nearly 69 years of marriage, they remained very much in love. George passed away in 2010. In this excerpt from a 2009 StoryCorps segment, George and Jean remembered the first time they met.
You walked in, and I said to myself, this is the girl I'm going to marry.
That's what he tells me, but he didn't tell me that for quite a while.
George Rogers was a consultant to the State Constitutional Convention and is considered Alaska's first economist. Together, they adopted and raised six children. Daughter Sydney Fedayoff says her mother worked quietly behind the scenes, volunteering at local schools and nonprofits, serving on boards and commissions, and still finding time to mother a house full of kids.
Mom and Dad loved kids, and they didn't care whose they were.
Jean always found time to write. Children's book author Susie Gregg Fowler was part of a Juno writers group with Rogers for many years. Fowler's husband, Jim, illustrated Rogers' book, The Secret Moose.
Jean encouraged all kinds of people in wherever their heart was taking them.
When an early draft of Fowler's book, Albertina, the Animals, and Me, was rejected by a publisher, she reworked it and brought it to the writers group. Fowler says members encouraged her to resubmit it to the same publisher.
I think Jean was perhaps the most adamant of them because she knew the editors to whom I was going to send it. She said, you need to send it back in. You know, it's different. They'll love it. Do it.
When the book was published, Fowler dedicated it to the writers group. In another KTOO interview, Rogers talked about how hard it is to get published.
It's difficult to find a story good enough, to do it well enough, to have somebody take it. And it's a great big fat joy when you do.
Rogers' children can tell many good stories about their mother. One of Fedayoff's favorites happened in her parents' later years. Jean was driving George home after knee surgery and stopped at a bakery to pick up some bread. When they got home, she helped George into the house and left the car door open. When she returned, a bear was after the bread.
Mom stood there and yelled at that bear to leave her bread alone and get out of that car, just like she was talking to a child. And the bear looked at her and picked up the bread and left.
In the StoryCorps segment they recorded, Jean and George talked about their rich lives and growing old together.
We've lived nearly 100 years apiece.
Well, yes.
And there's so much to talk about. We rattle on for, we could rattle on for a year.
Jean Rogers passed away Wednesday, surrounded by family. She's survived by five children and a large extended family. In Juneau, with help from Rosemarie Alexander, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, a neighbor for nearly 60 years. Whether barbecuing for a community picnic or delivering fuel to remote locations, Crowley lives and works in Alaska and is proud to support public radio, cpdalaska.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority was created by the Alaska State Legislature to develop, stimulate, and advance the economic welfare of the state and further the development of public transportation systems. The authority has completed required environmental work to date, and the Federal Highway Administration has given its approval needed to move forward. There's more information at KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Daisha Eaton. This week on AK, judge jamming. What do Alaska's judges do when they're not sitting on the bench? Do they ponder weighty tomes or engage in deep discussion about the legal issues of the day? Maybe some of them do that, but KSKA's Ellen Lockyer found that quite a number of Anchorage judges get together and play ukuleles for after-hours fun.
The ukulele, or more properly pronounced, ukulele, originated in Hawaii in the 19th century. The small, four-stringed instrument was influenced by Portuguese immigrants on the islands. By the early 20th century, the ukulele reached the United States. These days, its distinctive sound is showing up in pop music. Young ukulele virtuosos like Jake Shimabukuro are using YouTube and their own websites in widening the tiny instrument's appeal to the general public. You're hearing Jake Shimabukuro now, who's no slouch when it comes to bending the ukulele strings. Jake shreds, and one of his biggest fans is none other than Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Dana Fabe, who, when not on the bench, plays the ukulele herself. She says it runs in her family.
Dad was a lifelong learner, and he took piano lessons with us, and he taught us to play the ukulele.
She and her sister played as kids.
He told us that if we knew three or four chords, we could really play any song. So we learned those basic chords and learned to play from him.
She likes ukulele so much, she owns three of them. The Chief Justice says it's an easy instrument to learn and often gives them to friends as gifts. And she leads others within Anchorage's legal circles for regular ukulele jams that go on for hours.
Partly it was motivated by selfish reasons that I wanted people to play with.
That's beautiful.
Retired Judge Elaine Andrews is part of the ukulele gang. We're in Andrews' kitchen while she practices. Andrews says she's no virtuoso, but she's hooked on the instrument.
The people who play it tend to put their forefinger and their thumb together and strum in that fashion. It has a lovely tone. When I first picked this up, they just kept telling me, if you just pick up two or three chords, including a C that takes one finger, an F that takes two fingers, and a G, with those three chords, you can play a song.
The group calls itself Ukulaska and has put together its own songbook, chock full of old favorites.
It's like a tumbleweed keeps picking up people who either have an interest or they used to play it when they were younger or they wanted to get into it. And because we have such a wide range of talent and it's a very accepting, non-judgmental group, people just show up.
Attorney Barb Malchek is a mainstay of the group. She, too, played as a child.
And the first time I can remember ever playing an ukulele, I was in seventh grade, and we must have had one hanging around the house, and I picked it up. And then my across-the-street neighbor and I came in second in the school talent show, playing our instruments and singing. And I can't really remember even playing it again after that.
But later in life, she picked it up again. Malchek remembers how the ukulele band got started over at Chief Justice Dana Fabe's house.
And she mentioned that she plays the ukulele. So Dana pulled out her ukuleles and we just started strumming. And it just came back right away. So we were playing a little bit. And then that was really kind of the beginning of our group. And then she invited these other friends of hers, a lot of whom are judges or ex-judges, and it was very intimidating for me at first. I mean, these are people I'm used to calling Your Honor, but I don't know, the ukulele is kind of the great equalizer.
Malchek owns several of them these days. One's even electric. She picks it up.
Now this, you can really get going. Got a nice tone to it. So I tend to play the songs that, like the Beatles songs, that are a little more rock and roll.
Chief Justice Fabe says the ukulele can accompany any kind of music.
And it's a very forgiving instrument. You don't have to be playing it for very long and get a great sound out of it.
Ukulele actually means jumping flea in Hawaiian. And despite its growing versatility, it will ever be synonymous with the islands. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to the tiny southeast community of Port Alexander. The village of just 62 people is on the south end of Baranoff Island. Robin Griggs teaches school there.
We're very, very remote. No cell phone service, no roads. It's a boardwalk town, so there's no vehicles. We have a satellite dish that provides us with internet, and we do get telephone service, landlines. That's about it. No stores. In the summer, it's very active. There's lots of people who have summer homes here and spend a lot of time fishing. We do have two fishing lodges that run and provide services to people that come in sightseeing. There's hunting and fishing, and the school provides some entertainment for the students. Our school, it is a K-12 school. We have a kindergarten student, a third grader, a seventh grader, and the remainder are high school students. I'm responsible for all the K through 12 here. We survive on propane and fuel, so that has to be brought in on the EAC, which is a boat that comes in from Sitka, hopefully once a week. So there's no local prices for fuel or groceries here because we have no grocery stores or fuel areas here. We also only get mail, postage mail, once a week on Saturdays with our groceries. Most pressing issue, the discussion of becoming a borough in Southeast Alaska, which we currently do not belong to one. I would say, you know, that affects a lot in town. That affects our school district and what school district we would be in, you know, how we would be annexed off. So that's just the major issue right now, I think, in town. I moved here from Iowa last year and farm community, so it's been a big eye-opener. We've had a great season of bears, and we've had two tsunami warnings where we've had to get to higher ground in the night. So, between the bears and tsunamis, it's certainly been, you know, a year to learn for us.
Robin Griggs is the teacher in Port Alexander. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ellen Lockyer, Annie Feit, Dave Waldron, and Alex Dwyer. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Daisha Eaton.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mark Earhart in Kweetluk, Ed Schoenfeld and Casey Kelly in Juneau, and Shady Grove Oliver in Wrangell. Daisha Eaton was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Join in the excitement and the love of art at the Alaska Public Television Art Auction. Take a look at the paintings, drawings, mixed media, and sculptures from Alaskan artists online at alaskapublic.org. Be sure to watch KAKM Channel 7 for the Alaska Public Television Art Auction starting Thursday night from 7 until 10. And join us in the studio Friday and Saturday. All proceeds benefit KSKA, APRN, and Alaska Public Television. Information at alaskapublic.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.